Hey you, yeah you, come join our Discord. The Mixing Music Discord server is filled with tons of awesome information and people. People that can help you out and information that can help you grow your business and to help you improve your mixes. So come join us and find the invitation link at mixingmusicpodcast.com. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, DK, and with me, as always, is my lovely host, Low Pass Lou.
Hello.
Nickname was provided by @DoubleProfit7903 on YouTube. Thanks for the nickname recommendation, because we're getting way bad and uncreative at thinking of them. It's been like 350 episodes, you know, like... At some point, there's less and less L words that we have. Anyway, thank you for the recommendation with the Lou nicknames. All right, here we go. Today's episode is about mid-side processing. Mm-hmm. We've done an episode about it before, but it's been a while, so we'll just kind of go over into it. Today, we're talking about mid-side processing and whether it's a secret sauce or just spicy snake oil.
Ooh.
Here's the thing. Lou, you like mid-side processing. In fact, you like it enough that you had a former business. I don't know if it's current business either.
It's still registered, still paying taxes, but it's a sole proprietorship. Yeah.
Mid-side sound.
Yeah.
And, I am not against mid-side necessarily, and maybe it would be more fun if I totally was and played devil's advocate. But the fact of the matter is that I think that it's overhyped and unnecessary at the very least.
It definitely can be. Yeah.
Oh, you can't agree with me.
No.
I said it can be.
I didn't agree with you. I just gave you some flowers.
All right. I want you to be an apologist and just like fight your point to the death.
Oh, I definitely can.
You have to use it.
Because probably every mix I've done for the last 3 months has had mid-side.
All right, cool. And then maybe I'll just be devil's advocate anyway. But we're not here to trash your workflow, honestly. Unless your workflow is trash. I'm just kidding.
We'll leave you at home to decide that. Leave your thoughts in the comment section.
So what is mid-side processing? Here's the thing. In a post-production form, it is a separation of mid, mono, center of stereo image. Instead of compressing or EQing both the left and right signal in the stereo, left and right, it separates the signal to mono up the center and information that is different on left and right. That are turned to the sides. It's really interesting. If you have a plugin that monos the sides and the mid, you can really hear it. But it's like frequencies that are the same on both sides up the center. That's usually voice, kick, snare, bass. That's like not every song, but most of the time that's the case. Things that are not always up the center that are different left and right. So it would be the sides would be like reverbs, stereo, like stereo recordings, like if it's a choir that you have like stereo mics on, or like a horn section with stereo mics on, or like panned things, like if you pan a saxophone all the way to the right, that would not be mid information. If you panned it a little bit to the right, then there would be some mid information with the saxophone and some on the side. Right. So anyway, that's what mid side is. So like basically the mid, again, the center of your stereo image, side processing is everything not in the center. Now in recording, there is something called mid side recording. Mm-hmm. So what you do, this is, we're going to talk briefly about it because we're not really talking about that. But mid side recording is a technique where you kind of manipulate polar patterns with microphones. If you don't know what polar patterns is, look into that because this might be a little bit complicated, but I'm going to do my best to make this easy and accessible to understand. You have a cardioid polar pattern. It's the polar pattern that looks like some butt cheeks. So there's more rejection out the back of the microphone. So there's less information and less sound being recorded from the being heard by the mic from the back of the microphone, and more sensitivity from the front of the microphone. And then you put that in the front, and right next to it, right in front of it or behind it, you put sideways a figure eight, usually a ribbon mic, but some sort of, usually a ribbon mic, it could be a condenser, but some sort of figure eight polar pattern, which means that the front and the back is not sensitive. There's rejection in the front or the back of the microphone and only the sides. So you have one microphone that's only catching the front. So if you're trying to record an acoustic guitar, for example, one is only catching the front of the guitars, and then the other microphone
essentially catches the room.
It captures the room, the sides, the left and right sides. And there's something about flipping the face. So then you have to record that figure eight pattern. And here's the trick. If I remember correctly, it's been a long time. This is really interesting. So you have the mono center mm-hmm. signal from the cardioid mic, mm-hmm. which overlaps with the figure eight polar pattern microphone.
Which is so also mono.
Which is mono. So you duplicate the figure eight microphone signal and then you flip the phase mm-hmm. of one of them. And so now you have left signal, right signal, and center signal. And because of the flip phase, it
gives you this big old wide sound.
Yeah, it's really neat. Anyway, we're not talking about that though. We can do... Yeah. Anyway, Lou, you want to say anything about that recording process?
So let's talk about I guess on a very baseline level, how it works, because I think a place to start is mid-side. What's the benefit of processing anything in mid-side where you have independent control between what is in the center of the source audio and the sides? And when it comes to, like we just talked about, like a figure eight that is mono, what is the benefit of actually flipping it 180 degrees? And how does that actually help? And when, you know, if they're both out of phase from each other, one's positive, one's negative, when you sum it to mono or you play it on a mono system, what happens? And the reality is your sides actually cancel out. Your mid information is still the only information heard when you're actually playing back that signal on just one speaker or a Bluetooth speaker that's mono or something like that, or you're playing it off of your phone. Maybe you don't have like the newer iPhones that play in stereo or whatever. Even then, who can really hear the stereo off of that phone at like fucking 10 feet away? Point is, mid-side is not always a solution for getting wider or more separation, especially in a mono sense, because naturally when it comes to a mono source in that sense where like the processing, whether you took a mono track in your DAW or you did mid-side recording, the element that was phase flipped for the width of the sides will cancel out in mono. You know, so you just have to be aware of that. Now, in a stereo, what it does is it actually sums the two channels together, essentially. Bam. It sums the two channels together and... it then listens for all the common information that can be found at the center, and it treats that as the mid. And all the stuff that is different in the left and right from the center is now separated as the side sections. And with mid-side, the benefit that I have personally found, especially in the world of mastering, is that sometimes there may be just a buildup, maybe just an overlapping tone from two instruments playing together at the same time, that you might want to tuck a little bit in the mid, but you don't really want to take it away from the sides because there could be other elements that were hard panned or anything like reverbs, delays, that actually don't have an issue in that same range, but you want to take it from that range, you know? So you don't want to affect your sides. You just want to focus in on that center. It could be an overlap of, let's say, a boxy kick that has a lot going on around like 150, but then the snare smack is like around 120. So maybe you're trying to dip out a little bit of that 150 without affecting the 120 from the snare, but you're not trying to take 150 out from the sides. You know, so the benefit in mid-side is a lot of times just being a little bit more precise with the moves you're making on different records. Now, if you're doing this on, let's say, a drum bus, you could have just processed the one track. Like, let's just be honest. You could have taken it away from the one track. But let's say you're mixing a record that has samples in it, and the samples are... like a vinyl recording that was sampled in, then it has a lot of modulation going on it, and it just feels like something is a little weird on the sides. Like when you put it in the mix, there's always this one tone that comes through the sample that every time it comes up, it just feels like it makes it a little tubby on the sides. But it sounds perfectly fine in the mix because it's only really being affected on the sides, but you're not trying to make it sound thin in the middle of the mix. You can affect the sides independently. So the benefit for mid-side for me has always been just being a little more precise with your decisions, because if you start to go too far, this is where precision is lost. You can start losing phase coherency in your record. So it's a double-edged sword. It's a very specific tool for a very specific niche type of workflow.
Cool. You're kind of getting ahead of the plans with all that information. But anyway.
it's the basis of my work. Don't go too far. That's the power of mid-side.
Yeah. We were talking about mid-side recording versus mid-side processing. Whereas in like a mid-side plugin, it takes the left and right signal and there's an algorithm that separates the mid information from the side information. So you can compress or EQ the sides differently from the mids. And then there's like imager type plugins where sometimes it just boosts the volume of the sides or lowers the volume of the mid information, like a Wave Center or the free mid-side matrix from Goodhertz, which I'm a fan of and I use often. Anyway, we talked about what mid-side processing is. What is your go-to mid-side processing plugin? Like, what do you most often use mid-side with?
I have three. My first and foremost, my longtime beauty, my good time gal, is the BX Digital V3 from Brainworks. Very, very, very handy EQ. I use it a lot for mastering and like for bus processing. But it's one of those where it's like, it's so damn good. I don't care how like dated the user interface feels. Like, it's one of those where like, if they came out with a V4, I'd be so happy if they just gave me the ability to move around on the graph, but you're still stuck to just moving knobs. So it's no Q4 or anything like that, where like you just have the freedom to move things around. But I do enjoy what it sounds like. And I do enjoy that you can focus in as you touch each frequency or the bandwidth. You can listen to how the bandwidth is affecting what frequencies, because you can put solo mode on the bandwidth, on the EQ frequency that you're choosing, and how much gain you're applying. So you can actually solo out each section of the EQ, and you can solo out the mono, the sides. You can switch between mid-side mode if you don't want to use mid-side mode, but it defaults to mid-side mode because there was an emphasis behind it's designed to be a useful tool for mid-side processing. And I did find it useful for the longest. I do like the shelf curves and everything that it offers. It does kind of like that voice of God thing where you can actually like move the bell and the low pass at the same time. So super, super useful for that. Second one is FabFilter Pro Q4. I would say Pro Q3 because I've been using it longer, but Pro Q4 is the new one. So we'll just go with that. I do like the way it sounds, but I noticed that I can't do as much before issues on that one as I can with BX Digital 3. For whatever reason, I'm not sure. I'm not a programmer of plugins. I cannot dive into that. I just can speak on experience. But I do like the flexibility of Pro Q4 and how fast I can work on it. And in the past, I've made a video on Pro Q3 and how that one plugin makes me the most money because it's the one that allows me to work the fastest. So sometimes I'll just go for Pro Q4 and do mid-side on it anyways, because I just know I can work a lot faster and more effectively with it, and stay on track and not get distracted. And then lastly, this one's going to be kind of funny, Shep 73. I actually really like the Shep 73. Yeah,
I do too.
It's a really cool plugin. I like the EQ on it. But I use it more as a width tool with mid-side mode on it. Sometimes I'll just use it just to make the side a little bit louder.
There you go.
Yeah. So like a good use for this would be reverbs, for instance. I might use like the Shep 73 to take out like resonant areas of the reverb that I want the vocal to really occupy, but not the reverb to necessarily mask. And I'll boost up the sides to make the reverb feel a little bit wider.
Yeah. With reverbs is really nice.
Yeah.
You know what I'm thinking about? If talking about EQ and compression, I probably only do like 2 to 3 mixes a year where I use any instances of mid-side with those two things. Well, if we're including like imagers and wideners and stereo with like manipulation type plugins, I use it every mix.
Yeah.
Damn near every mix. Yeah, definitely. And multiple instances. Yeah. So it's like, I don't use it in the way of like compression and EQ. But I'll fuck up. I'm trying to be, I'll mess up the phase correlation a little bit on purpose.
Yeah, just to get it a little more vibey.
Yeah, so I guess I do use a lot of mid-side. I guess I do use a lot of mid-side. Although most of the widening plugins are more with phase and not necessarily like with mid and side explicitly or specifically.
Which is funny because like the number one thing that people always say be careful of is phasing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is my go-to mid-side plugin? The one that I do use most often. Okay, this is the one that I do use more than 2-3 times a year. I use this every 2 to 3 mixes. So not every mixed, but every like 2 to 3 mixes. The free mid-side matrix from Good Hertz.
It's basically
the wave center. Yeah. So all it is just two knobs.
Yeah.
Side volume, mid volume. Mm-hmm. And like I'll do like, with like all the backing vocals, like on a vocal bus, I'll like do like -1 dB of center information and +1.5 dB of side information on the vocal background vocal bus, just so there's like 1 dB of room for the center channel for the lead vocals.
Yeah.
That's like it. Otherwise for like EQ, I rarely ever do mid-side compression ever. I don't even think I do that once a year, twice a year, definitely not twice a year. But I do use, like, if I receive stems, not tracks, but like stems, orchestra stems, horn stem, where it's like all the horns in a single track, stereo track, backing vocals stem, then I will use mid-side EQ for correcting unchangeable, non-automatable things. So like I can't, like there is a vocalist in this choir, the stereo choir channel. There's a vocalist on the right side or like on the sides. It's a little bit harsh, like something very specific. The reverb is a little bit too wide and too sparkly in the top end. So I'm going to cut some top end off, but only from the sides because the center's fine.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's clashing with the reverb is a very often thing that I hear if the reverb is baked into the sound.
Yeah.
Or if they give me one vocal stem where it's a lead vocal and the background vocals, then I might use a mid-side EQ on like the Fab Filter Pro Q just so I can like EQ the background vocal a little bit differently than the lead vocal if I really need to. But those are like exceptions to the rules.
Yeah. I've done something like that where like there's like a buildup of like 500 hertz and a reverb. And I'm just take out that little 500 hertz out of the center just so it doesn't mess with the lead vocal. But I kind of like the way it sounds with the backing vocals on the side.
Yeah, I think it's just the way that my brain processes it is if I hear 500 hertz in the reverb, I just pull 500 hertz out completely. I don't even consider like the threshold of when my brain clicks and says, oh, mid-side would be a useful tool to correct this. The threshold for that is pretty high.
Yeah.
Like, because if I hear 500 hertz in a reverb, I'll just cut 500 hertz, you know? Anyway, let's see here. Mini debate. I have a mini debate for you.
Sure.
If you hear a vocal poking out harshly on one side because it's a stereo vocal, do you fix it with mid-side or are you first going to automate something?
This is assuming I have access to stems?
Sure.
Why wouldn't I just work on the vocal?
The point is, like, are you going to fix it with mid-side first or are you going to automate panning or something else first?
Automate.
Yeah, see, that's the thing with me too. It's like, it's a really cool tool, but like...
It's niche.
It's the basics, like panning, leveling, and the basics are more important than the technique of mid-side.
Yeah. Now, because of that, I think that's also why it doesn't get as much love as it could. Because you're right. In this case, assuming we have access to stems, why would we use midside? It's more work than necessary. But assuming that we now got a backing vocal bus where we want to take out something where it's like, hey, somebody's like hard panned right. And it's really just standing out. Like they're a little distracting. You don't want to take the entire right section out. And you also don't want to take that frequency out of the left side because it still feels in a balanced sense like there's still an abundance of it on the right versus the left because you took them down equally. So that's where like mid-side processing would come in handy, where like in FabFilter Pro Q4, you can do right channel only, left channel only.
Now that's really useful too.
Yeah, which is based on the idea of multi-mono, not mid-side.
And so, I use multi-mono all the time, to be fair.
Yeah,
I use multi-mono constantly, like almost every mix.
Yeah, for compression, I'm guessing?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah.
Now, it's not free. Like, there's good things. Like, when you compress a stereo bus,
mm-hmm.
and it's a stereo where it's triggered by one side, like the left signal, mm-hmm. like most VCA, like SSL-type compressors are, the left side is where the threshold is measuring.
Mm-hmm.
And then it dips the compresses the volume on both sides evenly. It maintains the stereo width and integrity of the stereo width. If you do multi-mono, one side won't get that much dramatically louder than the other side. It'll balance out the side as far as volumes go. But what that does is it also kind of by not an artifact necessarily, but a byproduct of that is that it kind of changes the left and right separation as well, the left and right relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a bad thing. It's not like phase issues or anything like that.
No.
But when the volume on one side is, when the dynamics between left and right are a little bit more, there's more feeling of separation. So it's just a small thing, but there is something to be said about stereo signal with multi-mono versus stereo compression. But
yeah.
I use stereo compression all the time because the practicality, multi-mono all the time because the practicality of like a drum kit overhead, for example, or, or I don't know, a drum, maybe not drums because of the cymbals.
I was going to say drum bus because of like
backing vocal bus. Yeah, backing vocal bus or like a synth bus possibly.
Mm-hmm.
If it's like like some sort of a cross, not necessarily like something that is
like
spread.
A spread art bus.
Sure.
Arpeggiated.
Spread but not separate, like left and right guitars. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, guitar bus with like duplicated left and right strumming patterns where it's like the same thing, but it's just there's a left take and a right take.
Mm-hmm.
Multi-mono for sure. Anyway, sorry, I'm eating something. I don't know why I started doing that just
You know, I saw you open it and I didn't think much of it. I didn't think anything of it. But
my body's just reacting. The one thing that we haven't said with this episode and the last episode is that literally yesterday I came home from a 100-mile race. So like,
yeah.
I literally ran 100 miles for 39 hours, came home Sunday morning at like 2 a.m.
Like this is the closest I've ever seen DK attempt a Trump cosplay.
Oh, what, because of my hair?
No, because of your suntan.
Oh, because of my suntan. I forgot to put on sunscreen. so I look like a panda. My eyes.
I was about to say, you have way too much hair to do a Trump impression.
Anyway, so I'm eating. My body's just eating, and I'm just.
Calories, my guy.
I burned over 13,000 calories in 48 hours. I need the calories.
Jesus Christ! At that point, I would have told you to like slurp ramen.
Dude, I had like 250,000 steps. A 250,000 steps.
I'm
going
to have to take
days.
You some mac and cheese. It's all the carbs, none of the gains.
Yeah, dude. Anyway, when it's a trap. Okay, so here it is. There is some byproduct and some artifacts that can happen from mid-side processing.
Mm-hmm.
Is you can accidentally narrow down the stereo image.
Yeah.
Like if you're not careful. And if you're over EQing the sides, there will be some phase issues possibly. Some like stereo weirdness might be happening. and there might be some bad mono compatibility. That being said, am I an advocate of mono compatibility? Hell no. If anything, I'm more of an advocate of stop worrying about mono compatibility. Yeah. But I think it's fair to say that that is something that it does.
Okay, so I have to say this just because you said stop worrying about mono compatibility, because there's one argument that pisses me off every time. And like, it's just so weird. When they play it live, all the speakers are in mono anyways. Shut the fuck up. No, they're not. No, they're not. I've done venues
actually,
that are...
I can't speak on this. Only you can speak on this. Tell me about this.
I've been at venues where there was 50 people in the crowd and 20,000 people in the crowd. And one of the upcoming shows is going to have 25,000 people in the crowd. We just got confirmed that it's sold out. So fuck you guys when you say shit is in mono the whole way through. But the reason
it
pisses me off...
it's not hard-panned, right? It's not hard-panned. Like, the snare is not coming out the left speaker.
No. But I did do a show...
Because you can isolate the audience, right?
You can isolate the audience, yeah. But, like, panning in live maybe is not as dramatic. Like, on my console, I'm like, if there was a 0 to 60 ratio, because for whatever reason, in most consoles don't say 100. They'll go to, like, 60 or whatever other number they want to factor. But,
arbitrary number.
Yeah. So like if my console goes 0 to 60, I might pan my floor tom all the way up to like 20, 25. You know, so that there's still some on the other speaker, but there is a difference when you're in the let's just put it this way. If you paid for fucking VIP, you paid $1,000 to $2,000 to see Beyoncé and you're sitting center VIP section, do you not want to hear the drums go do 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 across the fucking stage? Yes, you fucking do.
Hell yeah, I do, brother.
Hell yeah, you do. You paid good money to see a goddamn good show with a goddamn good mix. So, believe me when
Fair
I
enough.
Say, the last Kings of the West show, I was pissed in a very selfish way. When I went to soundcheck and I saw that all the DJ inputs and all the vocal inputs, everything was up the middle. And I kept wondering, I'm like, why does this video intro to the set sounds so weird? And sure enough, I look at everything that was like linked to be stereo, like quotation marks linked to be stereo, because on Yamaha consoles you channel link, you pair them, you don't actually put input stereo, you still have to pan them. All the DJs were in mono, all the video files were in mono, everything was in mono. And then I kid you not, right before our set went live, I took everything and started panning everything hard left and right that was supposed to be stereo. And sure enough, all vocal clarity came through the speakers because now there was separation between left and right and there wasn't so much fucking jarbling going on in the mono section. So when people say mono compatibility because of fucking live, fuck you. Because that's not a thing. And the more I talk to other people who do live sound on the same stages and share stages with us, like we're talking about E40's engineer, Two Shorts people and all that, even though the production companies change stage state by state, 90% of the time, they're still hard panning shit left and right. Your mix is still being played hard left and right. Now, mono compatibility is a thing on a smaller stage where like, you know, maybe they only got one speaker and it's a crowd of 50 people. Cool, you know, sure. But when you're in a stadium, yeah, you're just not hard panning the toms to the left or to the right. You're just not doing that. You're not making the lead guitarist only come out of the left side. No, that's not a thing. But there is still some panning going on. There is still some stereo imaging being worked into the mix because that allows for more separation in the mix.
What about the sub information?
Sub information?
Will that mono down?
Not always.
Okay, so there's some stereo.
There's been some shows where the subs are in stereo and some a lot of venues where the subs are in mono. But there is also, so you know about like 2.1 systems as far as like home studio setups or pro studio setups. Okay, so a lot of venues.
By the way, for those that aren't listening, like how speaker setups works, 2.1 means there's two regular speakers, like near field monitors, like in front of you. And then 0.1 means the subwoofers. Unless
exactly.
It's Dolby, there's 2 points, like 9.7, 0.2.
Yeah, at which point those are the overhead speakers.
9 around you, 7 above you, 2 subs, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, 2.1 means 2 main speakers, 1 subwoofer.
Exactly. So when it comes to live, some people like to do left, right, and then sub send. Some people like to do just left, right. Personally, I'm a left, right guy because though you can channel link and process link and blah, blah, blah. When you do a separated aux send, for instance, on a vocal, and it, let's say that you, for whatever reason, said, this is my parallel to over here, right? If you were sending it straight from that vocal, then any compression you put on that vocal would be sent through that aux. Well, in live sound systems, the reason that sometimes the lows are in mono or whatever is some people will actually do a left, right, which is then fed into the main system, which has like a roll off at around like 100, 120 hertz, depends on who calibrated the system and what sounded best for the venue. Roll offs are never the same. And then there's the point one, which would be either a matrix, copying the left and right, which is what I've done in the past when people tell me it's a 2-1 setup for the venue, where I'll say, cool, I'll just make a matrix send, which is really just an aux send that mirrors what's going on the master bus or whatever you send it from. Think about a matrix is like an aux send that cannot have a return. There's no return for matrixes. It's like if you had like a venue with 7 different zones, the bathroom needs music, the kitchen needs music, the dining room needs music. You would send those with matrixes. You wouldn't use an aux for that.
You're getting way beyond my understanding of how sound works, because matrixes are mostly for like big live setups and production setups,
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
Not really studio. Definitely
no, you never really use it for studios. There's applications for it. So let's say when we do our live podcast recordings where we have guests with us and stuff like that, like at playback, we might do a matrix send from the board to the stream where it's mirroring what we're doing on the board, you know, but that's pretty much it. Outside of that, no real use for it. But when you separate your left and right, and then you create a sub channel on the bus, you lose the ability to do the master bus processing. If you have like a master bus compressor or an EQ on your master bus, it will not affect the subs. The subs are on a completely separate output, which means it has its own master fader, so to speak, which means it has its own processing. And whatever you sent to it through an aux is not going to have anything that you did to the master bus. Mono compatibility, sure, when it comes to low end live, can be a thing, but a lot of spaces will still do very intricate things with their subs where if it's a fixed installation, they might keep the subs in stereo. They might just leave them in stereo. But if it's like, oh, we're flying a system and everything, and there's a system tech that has to calibrate the speakers the day before or the day of, they might just throw the subs in mono anyways. But that means you still have a left and right difference. It's just everything that is being fed to the subs is just one straight line worth of subs.
Okay, cool. Lou, I'm going to stop you because we're going way too long on something that only a few people are going to
get any benefit from on this episode.
All right. Okay, sweet. Okay, so back to mixing in the studio.
Yeah.
Let's see. Mixing versus mastering. Mid-side compression on a mastering chain tightens the center without killing the ambience. And gentle mid-side EQ to fix tonal tilt. Vocals too bright in the mid. Yeah, like mastering, I think there's more gentle like reasons for mid-side EQ and compression. So like in mixing, I don't know. I think like if you have access to panning and different individual tracks, like the multi-tracks, then I think that doing that and regular EQ and compression is good. All right. I think we're coming to the end of this. So, so in general, mid-side isn't a bad tool. It's just really easy to misuse. It's not free. Like there are artifacts, there are things that it can do to mess up the integrity of the mix and the phase. Now, that being said, I'm not going to say that complete integrity of phase is all that important. Like some things going out of phase is actually kind of cool and neat. And I use it all the time. But that being said, just being aware that it does happen, that there are artifacts, and being aware, paying attention to not doing it too much, it's not essential at all. And if we never had it, nobody had it before, very few people had it in the past. There was a time when it never even existed. It's not essential. You don't need it. But it is a good tool to finesse, you know, to finesse the mix or some balances issues and things like that. Mm-hmm. Don't use it because you can. That's like a bad reason to use something. I heard it on YouTube. I have the tools. It's necessary to me. Don't use it just because you can. Like, try to do it intentionally. But that's just like kind of like the message and theme of our podcast.
Yeah.
Do everything intentionally and mindfully. Mix mindfully is kind of like the slogan of the podcast.
You know, I made this point yesterday when I met up with some people. They were showing me a couple of their mixes, and we got onto the subject of like where creativity comes from and all that kind of stuff. And I remembered a conversation that we had about limitation breeds creativity. Mm-hmm. And they didn't really fully understand that. And I was like, okay, look at your plugin list. Like, just because Pro Tools was open in front of them, I'm like, just click on your plugin list real quick. He clicks on it, and sure enough, he could scroll for days just on brand names. And I'm like, cool. Now just go to any of them. Go to Waves, go to Plugin Alliance and all that. I'm like, can you name 15 of your favorite plugins from each one of those? He's like, I don't understand. I'm like, the real question here is like, does it really benefit you to have a million options or what? Like, just because it's there doesn't mean you need all these plugins. Like, which ones do you really use?
And to like, be which fair, ones do I am you know a f- best? I'm a freak of nature and I need all 1 million of them and I use every single one of them.
I just need them for when people send me files that I'm like, oh, I don't have that plugin. And then I'll try to do the demos. I try not to buy them.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
Yeah.
No, I'm teasing. I don't. Anyway, no. I do keep a digital note, sticky note on my desktop that I always pull up during every mix. It's like a list of like 10 to 20 plugin names. Of plugins that I haven't been using recently that have kind of become out of habit. So I like recirculate them into like habitual use and to redetermine if I still like it or not or have a new use case for it. So I like relearn the plugins that I haven't been using in a while. So
just to keep
plugins that are on the list but haven't been used in a while front of mind.
I don't have a list, but one plugin that I had to do that with was Transgressor. And I'm so glad I did because that thing is beautiful.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. So if you want to learn more about Midside and maybe some of my hotter takes, or if you want to learn other technical tips on how to make your mixes better, then go to mixandmusicpodcast.com/Patreon, where we have over 250 episodes of exclusive content. And that's April 2025 to over 250 episodes. And then at least 1 to 2 episodes every single week. Recently, they've been one longer one instead of 2 shorter ones every single week. Mm-hmm. That might be something we try. But either way, 250 episodes, hours and hours and hours of content. Technical content with me and James. We break down different mixing techniques, mastering techniques for you to enjoy. And that's on our Patreon, mixingmusicpodcast.com/Patreon. Also, there is free stuff on there. So if you just enter your email in exchange for me getting your email, there is free downloadables on there. So if you want to check out the free stuff too, you can go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/free. To sign up for a free Patreon account and get some free stuff too. And I'm going to spam you with emails. I'm just kidding. I don't spam emails. In fact, it is actually a weakness of mine. I don't use this bulky email list that I have.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I was about to say that too. I'm like, I think I have an email list of like 2,000 people just off of my template alone. And I don't think I've emailed them in the last year.
I know, for real.
So if you guys want to subscribe, knowing that we won't abuse your inbox, I think we're pretty trustworthy on that one.
Honestly.
Yeah.
All right, dude. Okay, so on that note, happy mixing, my friends. And stay saucy. If you love the Mixing Music Podcast but want deeper, ad-free, technical episodes, we've got you covered. Our Patreon gives you access to over 250 exclusive episodes and new content every single week, all focused on mixing, mastering, and engineering at a high level. For just $4 a month, you get practical tips and techniques that will instantly improve your sound. Join now at mixingmusicpodcast/exclusive.